This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
It's a Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Brought to you by Coors Light. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
From the San Francisco 40, Prescott takes the shotgun snap. He's going to run around left guard. Prescott slides inside the 25, but there's 8 seconds left and counting. They scurry up to the line of scrimmage, down to two, down to one. It's down to zeros. What will they say here? San Francisco onto the field with the coaching staff and the sideline players. They think it's over. And everyone looking in the direction of referee Alex Kemp.
That's the end of the game.
There you go. 14 penalties in that game, but the biggest botch by the Cowboys was the last play of the game. They had 14 seconds left. Clock was stopped. Ball at the San Francisco 41-yard line. Down by six. In my mind, the chance to throw the ball into the end zone twice on what would be sort of a quasi-Hail Mary. 41 yards, not exactly midfield, but close to it. Two Hail Marys-ish, or run the ball to about the 25-yard line, get down, slide, hope that the referee gets up in time to spot the ball, and hope that the clock doesn't run out and you can spike it and throw it into the end zone from the 25-yard line instead of the 41-yard line. The Cowboys chose the latter, and it did not work. Dak Prescott did not get down in time. The referee didn't spot the ball in time. The game ends, and they throw Seth into the end zone zero times instead of two times.
Yeah, and all the Cowboys, at least key Cowboys, making vast excuses at the end of the game for basically something that anybody else could have seen coming a mile away. Because like 16 seconds is the old school rule for how long it takes to get a playoff, get down, spike the ball. If you're, I guess, if you're being safe, I think it's theoretically with the run, you should be able to line up and get the ball spiked faster because everybody's already down there. Like, if they passed, then the offensive linemen all have to run down. I think the one difference there is that with the pass, there's more room for the officials to get in and spot the ball versus when there's a big scrum downfield.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden, it gets a lot harder to spot the ball. But Mike McCarthy, after the game, acted like, oh, no, I definitely should. This should have happened. Like, no, you know better than that. You tried to get a little too clever. Maybe Dak Prescott should have gone down, as Romo suggested, like after he got 10 yards or so.
Yeah, about the 30. Yeah,
get down just far enough to make it a realistic pass attempt and go down. But which is funny because during the play, Romo was saying, oh, no, Jim, they've got plenty of time. They planned for this. And then like 30 seconds later, oh, yeah, no, you can't get this off. Everybody knows that.
That tells me that Romo's getting to be a really good broadcaster. Changing his narrative 30 seconds later and hoping nobody notices. So my career's been built on doing that, so I can't say I...
Seriously, though, he's regressed quite a bit, hasn't he, in the
last few years? His best season was his first.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was dynamite coming out of the shoot. He's still really good. But he set a really high bar, huh?
Is he though?
I think he is. I enjoy all I care is, do I enjoy watching the games? Do I learn a few things? I do learn a few things.
I feel like
Romo,
he's getting to kind of a Phil Sims level where sometimes he's talking about things that didn't actually happen.
Them's fighting words.
He's being explained there are certain things too as we're going along. Or I like there's times where I can tell he's being fed information by a producer.
Okay, I gotta watch closer.
He'll deliver it almost like he's surprised.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, they lead the league in third downs.
Huh?
Really? Oh, okay.
No kidding. Thanks, Bob. Here's Mike McCarthy following the game on his decision to run the plays that he did.
It's like anything else. Do you want to be running the Hail Mary play from the 50-yard line, or you want to be running five verticals from the 25-yard line? So that's the decision. It's the right decision. It's just like anything. It's, you know, the execution between us and the officiators putting the ball obviously wasn't in tune, we shouldn't have had any problem getting the ball spotted there. Just if that's what you're looking for.
All All right, Seth, a couple things there. He's doing the thing that we're all prone to do when we make a decision that blows up in our face. He's blurring the numbers on the side of the equation that should have been what he did. Like, what, would you rather have a Hail Mary from the 50 or, one shot into the end zone than a bunch of verticals from the 25? Okay, it would have been two Hail Marys because you had 14 seconds left. And two, it was the 41-yard line, not the 50-yard line. Don't tell me that every 10 yards doesn't count when you just burned the rest of the game trying to get 15.
Yeah, or, hey, how about this, Mike? Would I rather have two shots from the 50 or zero shots at all?
Right.
Okay, so I'm like, no, it's not. And I was like, hey, like, not wearing a condom wouldn't have been a big deal if she hadn't gotten pregnant. Like, yeah.
it's what
the hell are you talking about,
yeah.
McCarthy?
Yeah.
Would I rather have, hey, would you rather have two shots from the 50 or $200 million?
He's like, a buffoon, no. Man. He is a buffoon, and he's a clown, and he's going to keep his job because Jerry Jones doesn't fire coaches. Jerry Jones likes yes men. Mike McCarthy is a yes man. The blaming the officials at the end is classic Cowboys, classic McCarthy. And Dak, here's Dak after the game. I would say this is kind of a form of ref blaming. Here was Dak talking about the fans at AT&T Stadium throwing debris onto the field. At first, it looked like they were throwing it at the Cowboy players. But as it turns out, they were, well, at least people say they were throwing it at the referees. At first, this question, take a listen to the answer. The question is, what did you think about the fans throwing debris at the Cowboys players? And then a reporter follows up to clarify. Take a listen to Dak Prescott.
It's sad. I mean, you're talking about a team. You're talking about men that come out each and every day of their lives and give everything to the sport, give everything to this game of football. Nobody wants to succeed more than we want to succeed. I understand fans and the word fan for fanatic. I get that. But to know everything that we put into this day in and day out, try our hardest. Nobody comes into the game wanting or expecting to lose. And for people to react that way when you're supposed to be a supporter and be with us through thick and thin, that's tough. Credit to them then.
The follow-up question, if you couldn't hear it, was they were actually throwing it at the referees, Dak. So after that whole soliloquy on, oh, don't throw stuff, we work hard, we come in every day, blah, 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 they were throwing it at the refs. Oh, okay, credit to them.
It's a weird, Sean, tell me if this sounds like it makes any sense. And I'm wondering if our listeners feel this same way. Like, without talking any smack about the Cowboys or Dallas, the city, or anything like that, I don't want to get into that old thing of, Dallas versus Houston. When I watch Cowboys fans in the stands, This isn't born out of any animosity or anything. It doesn't feel real. Like, it doesn't feel like the heartache is the same or the depression. Like, when I watch the Bengals fans or the Browns fans or Bills fans or something like that, I feel genuinely bad for them when they have a playoff disappointment. With the Cowboys, even though they've had very little playoff success for the last 25 years, very little. They've won three playoff games now in the last 25 years.
Something like that, yeah.
So, yeah. I just look at it, and like every time they show the sad fan, I feel like it's all for show. Okay. I don't believe it. Are they phonies? Like, why? What is the difference?
I'm going to tell you. There's a few reasons, and I'm going to involve the three teams that you just named as fan bases you feel badly for in part of my answer: Bengals, Browns, Bills. Mm-hmm. The first part of my answer is, the Cowboys, while they have not experienced a lot of success over the last couple of decades, they do have several Super Bowl championships that they have hung on the wall. Like, they have experienced success as a franchise at some point in the Super Bowl era. The three teams you just named have combined to win exactly, hang on, let me add it up, zero Super Bowls.
Yeah, you know what it is? I think this is what it is. I wish if Cowboys fans hadn't been relegated to always bragging about those Super Bowls from two generations ago.
Yes.
Then I might feel bad for them. It's just that they're so adamant that they're superior because back when their granddaddies were teenagers, the Cowboys won a few Super Bowls. That's what keeps you from. But see, when Green Bay went through their rough stretch, I actually felt bad for Green Bayians. Green Bay.
Yeah, maybe it's the fact that these are franchises that live in miserable cold weather cities for 11 months out of the year. That could be. I mean, you just the cities you all named are places you can't really go outside for about 7 months of the year without getting frostbite in the first 15 like seconds.
They've got brats,
yeah,
or buffalo wings, or, oh my God, Skyline Chili, right, and nothing else.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Of course, good. Now I'm really happy for Cincinnati when I think of that Skyline Chili.
It's just trash. It's
awful. Watery mess.
Yeah. The other part about your question about why do we not feel sorry for Cowboy fans, because the dude who they showed hugging his girlfriend and sobbing, you know, in their Cowboy jerseys and t-shirts, they're going to go home, and now that the Cowboy season is over, they will gladly strip off the Cowboy gear and throw on their Laker gear. And then when they realize that they look and they haven't checked the standings to see that the Lakers are trash this year, they'll go, oh, well, thank God, baseball season is here. And they'll go and they'll take off their LeBron jerseys and they'll put on their Yankee gear. And then they're going to look and go, oh, no, there's a lockout. We might not play baseball. Oh, God. And they'll strip that off and they'll go, well, college football will be here soon enough. And they'll put on their Notre Dame gear. That's what they'll do.
Wouldn't it be Alabama gear? Possibly,
might
maybe
be now.
Not this year. Not, yeah. They're second guessing it after this championship
game.
Like,
yeah. Or Miami back in the day, Ben. Yeah, a lot of people wearing their stuff with the U.
So they became
garbage. What?
Ben went to Miami.
No, so I know. I went to Notre Dame. I'm just saying we have a lot of bandwagon fans.
Well, I just explained. It doesn't, you know, you said Ben like he was a bandwagon fan or
right.
something.
I did, didn't I?
Yeah.
I did. Sorry, Ben actually went to the U. Our producer. So that's why, Seth, and I feel we got so much positive reaction out of bumping into the show with the Cowboys failing miserably yesterday. I felt like we had to do it again right there. And we'll do it again in headlines as well.
Yeah, the Cowboys had a particular brand of idiocy yesterday, too. Like, all those penalties they just did so many things to shoot themselves in the foot.
That's why the referee couldn't spot the ball. They were tired from throwing all those damn flags. They were winded from throwing all those flags on the Cowboys. You know, that's
where do you stand on the Raiders game? The
whistle?
Yeah.
I feel like the correct call would have been to nullify the touchdown by the letter of the law. By the spirit of what happened on the field, that whistle didn't affect the play. The whistle got blown when it was like 5 feet away from Tyler Boyd's hands. Like, I don't think the Raiders stopped. And then Joe Burrow paused and threw the football against 11 dudes that were standing around.
The only thing is I'd like to hear from the Raiders defensive back that was in the vicinity, and I'm sure he spoke about it after the game. I think if he would have said that he had stopped playing, it would have been bigger headline. So I didn't really go looking for it.
The headline was that crew was awful the whole game.
Well, Jerome Boger is not a popular.
He sucks.
Yeah, it was. It's been put out there that crew's not going to be working for the rest of the playoffs.
Yeah, what were they doing in the playoffs in the first place? Is my question. The dream scenario with Deshaun Watson is firmly in play for the Texans. We'll discuss it next.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
It's a Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Brought to you by Coors Light. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
Good to be with you on a Reaction Monday presented by Coors Light. Payne and Pendergast with you. Nick Caserio joins us tomorrow at 7:30, so make a note of that. As far as the Texans go, the dream scenario with Deshaun Watson may be firmly in play. The first thing we needed was for Miami to back away from their desire to trade for Deshaun Watson. According to Ian Rappaport of the NFL Network, it appears things could be moving in that direction.
The Miami Dolphins are going into the 2022 season with Tua Tagovailoa as their starting quarterback. And I think most of us know by the time we got to this point in the season, we assumed it would be Deshaun Watson. But that did not happen. The Dolphins not only didn't trade for Deshaun Watson, they also fired Brian Flores. I am told do not expect the Dolphins to pursue Deshaun Watson again. In fact, as they embark on this journey to hire a head coach, the hope is that they find someone who will build around and support Tua, not replace him.
All right, so that's the Miami half of this for the dream scenario. So the dream scenario for Texan fans, the scenario you should be dreaming of in trading Deshaun Watson, one, you got to get Miami out of there. Two, you got to get the New York Giants into the mix. And there was a series of tweets this weekend from Jordan Schultz, who he's an NFL writer. I don't know how much truth there is to it, but we'll talk about hypotheticals with the Giants, not reports that he's going there, because Jordan Schultz treats it as developing story. Deshaun Watson and Brian Flores have been in constant communication trying to navigate a scenario where they go to the same team per sources. Watson trusts and likes Flores and has been adamant internally that he'd like to play for him next season. So, of course, Flores, of course, has interviewed for the Texans job, so that opens up a whole other can of worms. But let's keep it focused on the Giants for a second, because I don't think Deshaun's playing for the Texans again.
I think we can revisit it later, but I don't think we should casually brush aside any notions about anything.
Okay,
with everything that's happened with Deshaun Watson,
this is the dream scenario that involves a trade of Deshaun Watson. Then, Brian Flores and Deshaun Watson going to New York, and the Texans getting serious draft capital from the New York Giants. This is what we have to impress upon you. Trading with the Dolphins would mean the best pick that you're going to get immediately would in all likelihood be the San Francisco first-round pick the Dolphins have, which at best, because San Francisco keeps winning in the playoffs, at best is going to be the 25th pick in the draft. The Giants have the 5th and the 7th pick in the upcoming draft. Seth, I put it to Texan fans on Twitter, a couple thousand votes in a Pender poll. Which would you, and I'm curious what your answer would be, and this can take us back to maybe Deshaun staying here. Which combo platter would you rather have? Brian Flores and Deshaun Watson for the Texans, if you're a Texan fan. Would you rather have head coach Flores and QB Watson, or some other head coach and a slew of New York Giant draft picks, including one that's in the top 7 in this coming draft?
So I would take the slew of draft picks.
So would 59% of the people who voted in my poll.
Yeah, look, this is the thing, man. Even if you side with Deshaun Watson in all of this, and for me, honestly, I kind of followed the trajectory that I half expected that it would. When Deshaun first requested the trade, I was angry with the Texans organization myself. I got it. It just made sense. Then all the allegations came out that complicated things. But then especially the damn, because aside from the allegations, okay, with, you know, that's innocent until proven guilty. We don't know exactly how to feel about that right now. But I had predicted that I predicted with myself. I'm not saying like I predicted the whole situation. I figured that if he started invoking that no trade clause and using it to hurt the Texans, then I was probably going to flip. And that's what happened. Once it became like, oh, no, the precious prince only wants to go one place. Cinderella needs her porridge just right. That's when I flipped. I said, all right, man, you're dead to me. I just said, no, I don't want him coming back here. I don't need him coming back here after that and after dragging everybody through everything the last year, regardless of how justified he was in being upset with the organization. That's what did it for me. So I think there's just too much history and baggage there. Not to mention, you know, depending on what happens with the lawsuits, I think there's almost like a there potentially could be almost like a moral duty to just get the guy out of the city.
Well, and I think that might be how the team feels. You know, even if Deshaun said, hey, I want to come back, I think there's a good chance that one of two or both these things could be the case with the Texans. One is they've already moved on from Deshaun from a moral standpoint, like you just said. Like even the things that he's admitted to having happened, maybe he disagrees over the intent on both sides behind it. You know, he's saying consensual. the plaintiffs are saying not. There's enough there where if you're an organization that's got a high threshold for conduct, you're like, I don't know, that's just creepy. I'd rather the five first-round picks or whatever it is. That's one. And just real quick.
Sean, yeah. No, but when I'm talking about the moral side, too, I'm thinking about the fact, like, if the organization feels that the 24 women, if they, you know, believe the 24 women, then, okay, do those women who want, if they want to stay in Houston, need to have Deshaun Watson shoved in their face every day?
Yeah,
year,
yeah.
You know?
Yep, the whole thing. And then I think there is a part just from the mechanics of putting together a football team. I think there's a good chance this is the case, and this is just human nature, that Nick Caserio has sort of accepted, maybe from jump once he got here, once he saw how bad the Deshaun situation was, and certainly once it got worse, that he's been of the mindset for the last year, like, this is how we're going to rebuild this team. You know, this is how we're going to do it. Like, this is going to be the way. And honestly, if you're a new general manager, there is something to wanting to rebuild it with a ton of draft picks versus inheriting a quarterback and then trying to manage around a $40 million salary cap. I think there is something to that. So I'm with you. I think they move on. But you're right. We can't just drive by it and ignore the fact that it could happen because so much weird stuff happens with this football team.
And it's a strange spot, too, because I think our knee-jerk reaction when Caserio came here would be that, oh, wow, he's going to want everybody to be nameless, faceless players with no joy or anything like that. I don't think it's that kind of an organization. I think it's probably going to turn into something more like what Deshaun ironically wanted and would have envisioned when he talked about, you know, the joy of playing football and all that at the end of his season-ending press conference last year. Look, I don't think they're going to hire a guy quite like David Culley, but I don't think they're going to hire a Belichick. I don't think they're going to hire a guy that sucks the fun out of everything.
So you don't think they're hiring Flores, which is the guy who he wants?
I don't know. Flores might be a different personality than Belichick. Belichick's like almost not a human being, you got to remember.
Yeah.
Whereas Flores seems like a pretty – he actually seems like an actual human being.
He does. I guess – and this comes down to, do you believe the reports out of Miami? I mean, the reason he got fired was not because of his performance on the sidelines as a head coach. It was he didn't get along with people.
Right.
You know?
But he was was he not getting along with – people who weren't doing their jobs properly?
Maybe.
Or was he not getting along with assistant coaches versus players?
Maybe.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I haven't heard any reports of like players that said that they wanted to quit football entirely because of Brian Flores, the way Brandon Brooks did with Bill O'Brien.
No, that's fair. That is fair. And we should point out that the reason why Deshaun Watson and Brian Flores would have so much communication and would know each other, because some people may be saying, what's he doing already talking to the Miami head coach? That would be tampering, would it not? They have the same representation. So maybe they haven't talked directly, but they've got enough behind-the-scenes commonality to know what each other's about.
Well, and even if it would be tampering if the Texans thought it was tampering or complained about it. And they may have given permission, or they may think, okay, if it's conducive to getting a trade done,
yes,
we're all about it.
Yep.
Now, you could argue that it's not all that conducive if Flores is getting Deshaun that much more invested in the idea that, nope, I'm going to go where Flores goes. Because that makes it harder, theoretically, to get a trade done, too. That's going to limit to one team that wants both Flores, or potentially one team that wants both Flores and Watson.
Yeah, it's the same topic as this time last year, trading Deshaun Watson. But it's kind of fun having some new storyline wrinkles in the mix. You know, it's kind of this, you know, the Giants thing is really interesting just from the standpoint of, boy, this could be it. They might hit the mother load with, you know, if they somehow convince the Giants to trade both of those top seven picks in a Deshaun Watson deal. Holy crap. That would be fun.
That would be. No, then the problem really becomes, okay, you'd have a third, a fifth, and a seventh round pick, or a third and a fifth and a seventh overall pick. And if those all work out, you got to pay those guys in 4 years. It's not as bad as it was back when Stafford and Ndamukong Suh were both high picks, and like it became, and Calvin Johnson,
yeah,
were all high picks in the same area, and like so they had to say goodbye to Ndamukong Suh because they couldn't pay all those guys. But it would be a nice problem to have.
Well, you also had to back in all those guys you just said were all pre the new collective bargaining agreement.
Right.
You had to pay them like they were Pro Bowlers before they took a snap in the NFL.
It was a lot harder to smooth it out, where now you can smooth it out a lot more easily. It's a good problem to have.
Yeah.
And the other thing is for you to be in a bind where you have to pay all those guys, then they all have to work out. Yeah. Statistically, it probably wouldn't happen. But you also, like, maybe Nick does and I wouldn't be surprised. If Nick has a number three, a number five, and a number seven overall pick, I think a couple of those are getting traded back pretty aggressively. You're going to get a bunch of late ones and twos out of it.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because Nick Caserio gave us two breadcrumbs on Friday in his press conference, one on the next head coach and one on what Seth was just talking about, the draft. You'll hear it next.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
It's a Reaction Monday from the Twin Peaks Studios on Sports Radio 610. Brought to you by Coors Light. Keeping Texas chill. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Nick Caserio gave us a few breadcrumbs on Friday. The first one, I think this is an indicator or maybe a greasing of the skids for hiring an unconventional head coach.
So by breadcrumbs, you're talking about the Cinderella story. Right, which is that?
The one where she mows down a bowl of porridge that you just talked about?
Earlier I had talked about Cinderella needing her porridge to be just the right temperature. That was Goldilocks.
That was her sister Goldilocks.
Yeah, so now just everything's going to be Cinderella to me. When Hansel and Cinderella followed the breadcrumbs or thought they were going to follow the breadcrumbs back.
Yeah. Right. Cinderella in Wonderland. Same thing. Yes exactly.
So, but Nick Cinderella Caserio did give us some breadcrumbs.
He did.
Honestly, everybody settle down. I don't think Sean and I are reading too much into this. I think some of these were conspicuously placed breadcrumbs.
Okay.
Like Caserio was saying, "Hey Birdie, come eat this breadcrumb." Okay?
Right.
I don't want to get lost in the woods.
Right.
There's a breadcrumb.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. He wants you to all gather around NRG Stadium with your beaks open, waiting for breadcrumbs. Here's the first one. This is Nick Caserio. When he was asked by Brian T. Smith about some blue blood franchises, how do the Texans get to that level? He volunteered just one of the stories that impresses him the most, and it's that of the Pittsburgh Steelers and Mike Tomlin.
I mean, nobody respects what the Pittsburgh Steelers have done more than myself. And when you look at Coach Tomlin, I mean, you look at the organization, right? Basically three coaches over the course of the Rooney ownership, right? They went from Chuck to Bill to Mike. And when Mike was hired, Mike was a coordinator for 1 year in Minnesota, right? He was 30-something years old, maybe 31 years old, whatever it was. And at the time, I don't think people knew, like, okay, Mike Tomlin is going to not have a losing season in 15 years. I think the Rooneys saw Mike Tomlin and said, you know what? That's our guy. We believe in him, and we're going to give him the runway and the opportunity. And, I mean, look, Mike's as good of a coach, I would say as good of a leader as there is, and forget about sports, probably in, like, organizational behavior.
All right, so Seth, that to me, immediately when I heard it, I went straight to Twitter so I could plant my flag in this take. That felt like a greasing of the skids for a Gerard Mayo hire. But since then, we found out that the Texans have interviewed Hines Ward, and we've seen rumors that Josh McCown might be involved in this head coaching search. So that's three unconventional candidates right there.
This is the difference. And as one of our listeners pointed out, Tomlin had been a coach for 7 or 8 years by that point, so he had lots of coaching experience. He just didn't have a whole lot of actual coordinating experience, decision-making experience. But I guess in terms of it maybe being an unconventional hire, a hire of somebody that didn't have a lot of the conventional experience, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Hiring somebody where the force of personality and charisma seem to be as much of a deciding factor as anything else. Because, I mean, if you look at Gerard Mayo, he's only been a coach for 3 years. But he was in the NFL for a long time. That's the X factor. You know, how much of that time, especially if you think you're going to go into coaching when you're done, maybe you pick that up. Just like Vrabel thought he was going to go into coaching when he was done. So all that time he spent with the Patriots, he was probably taking a lot of notes on how to coach and manage a football team. But it would still very much be unconventional. I do think, like, I don't get too much into whether you're an offensive coordinator or a defensive coordinator or a special teams coordinator. I don't care about which side of the ball people have their expertise. I do get nervous about guys who don't have any decision-making experience. because that's Culley talked about it in his last press conference. Like there's a difference between making suggestions, which he had done his entire career, and then actually making the decisions. There's a whole weight that comes with that that I feel like a guy should have a little bit of experience with that before you take on all the extra responsibilities of being an NFL head coach.
Of those three, if it had to be an unconventional hire with no coordinator experience, hell, in the case of McCown, no NFL coaching experience, is Mayo the no-brainer of those three for you? I mean, we know so little about these guys as coaches, so we're kind of throwing darts a little bit, but is Mayo, from what we do know, is Mayo the no-brainer of those three?
Mayo's the no-brainer in that I think, one, like I think that somebody in the Texans organization has been pushing for Jerod Mayo to be out there as a potential head coaching candidate for 2 years, since the conspicuously placed Houston Chronicle article about Jerod Mayo's...
November 28th, 2020 is the date on the article.
November 28th, 2020. Yeah. So, it was only a year and a few months ago. Okay.
Well, I'm sure the work didn't start on November 27th when it comes to the Mayo endeavor.
Yeah, look, Jack Easterby loves Jerod Mayo.
Yes.
And the thing is that a lot of people love Jerod Mayo, and it's not one of these things that is... It doesn't feel like he's Jack Easterby's pet as much as maybe Jack Easterby might be Jerod Mayo's pet. I don't know. I think that there's that, so that makes it more likely. With Josh McCown, again, if you go back to the actual coaching experience, okay, I've said that at the very least I want a guy to have a year of decision-making ability just to see and to know that, just to know what it's like. Josh McCown's never even coached. And again, look, being in a room and being a good resource for younger quarterbacks to use as a sounding board or to learn how to watch film, that's great. That's awesome. That's being a tutor. Like, that is not the same thing as coaching. It's not by a long shot. It's not even close to is it actually coaching. So I think with McCown, he just needs some seasoning at some point. Like, go be a coach. Like, how committed are you? You got to spend a couple years as a practice squad player who lived at home. Then you took a year off, and then now all of a sudden I'm just going to let you shuffle on into a head coaching position? Screw that. Hey, you know what, Deshaun? That's the kind of stuff that I don't care. Okay, hey, Josh McCown, he's a great guy. Oh, Josh McCown does this the right way, the right that way. You can never be a steady starting quarterback. How am I to know that it wasn't just that you underperformed and maybe you weren't committed enough to it? Because if you can't commit to actually coaching to get a head coaching job, then you're garbage to me. I don't like Josh McCown. Who is this guy who is so entitled to think, I've been a backup quarterback in the NFL for quite some time. Time for me to mosey on into a head coaching position. No. I don't need that entitled attitude.
Are we sure that that's exactly what he's doing? Kicking his legs up like you are right now on the desk and leaning back and saying, and basically expecting people to shower him with head coaching jobs.
Yeah, I mean, he's doing it in an innocent way, like where he doesn't even realize that's how
by saying yes to a Texans interview.
It's kind of how how Tebow used to. They'd be like, Tebow's a great kid and everything, you know. I mean, he's a man by now. I think he's had sex, and but he used to sometimes, you'd listen to him in interviews, and I was like, this kid is just, he's like royalty. Like, he's a prince that's been treated a certain way growing up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think Josh McCown might just feel like, yeah, of course. People tell me I'm smart and good all the time, so of course I should be a head coach. Because I know some of these guys, like Mike McCarthy's a head coach. Why shouldn't I be a head coach?
That's that would be a good take by Josh McCown, actually.
It's fair, but I at least want him to, like, maybe actually coach for, like, actually show. I don't like this notion of Josh McCown sitting out there turning his nose up at entry-level job positions because he's waiting for the head coaching job.
Well, but now, unless you've changed your mind, and it feels like you might have talked yourself out of it in the last 5 minutes, you would still be okay with him being the offensive coordinator for the Texans.
Yeah, I'd give that a look-see. Yeah. Go for that. If you have an offensive-minded head coach, at least. Right. Yeah, now, if they get a defensive-minded head coach, if D'Amico Ryans comes in, I don't want Josh McCown as the offensive coordinator. I want somebody with some seasoning.
Yeah.
You know, kind of like it was nice when Gary Kubiak had Wade Phillips to kind of balance things out.
Yeah.
I'd like to do it that
That's
way.
That's good. That's good. Here was the other breadcrumb from Nick Caserio. This was Nick Caserio on the state of the franchise. Take a listen to the very end of this when he talks about the draft capital they have going into this spring's draft.
Our situation right now is a lot better than it was, I would say, when we sat here last year from a asset allocation, from a salary cap structure, from resources or players in the building to externally opportunities that might be available for us in free agency to, you know, right now we have the third overall pick or whatever that is, you know, whether or not we stay at three, that's a whole separate discussion, but we'll talk about the draft a little bit later.
Okay, you can't tell on the radio, but he did kind of get a glow about him.
Yeah.
When he talked about moving back from the third overall pick.
And then when he did the GM show later with Mark and John. Do we have that?
We've got that right here.
I apologize.
Yeah. We've got that. And so a little later on that day, he doubled down on it.
There's certainly things that you look and say, okay, you know what? We have an opportunity to potentially build on, you know, young players on offense, have still a few good offensive linemen under contract. You know, probably have a few more players on defense who aren't under contract, but you're able to see some production from some different players. You know, a guy like KG, you know, had his most productive season at linebacker over the course of his career. So is that a player that, you know, we would like the opportunity to maybe bring back, you know, possibly, you know, now what that looks like in, if we get to that point. So there's some, I would say, things that are in place, and we're in a better position from a salary cap standpoint. We're in a better position from a draft allocation, draft asset resource allocation standpoint. So, and, you know, we have a, you know, the third pick in the draft as of now. So you would hope that you're going to get, you know, a good football player that's going to come in and help your program.
As of now.
There was another spot in there, too, that he slipped it in the middle of a John Harris question. So that's at least three breadcrumbs that I can think of.
Of trading back. This I am confident in. He wants to trade back from the number three overall pick. The problem for Nick Caserio is that the packages that you think of for the number three overall pick are usually traded when quarterbacks are available with the number three overall pick. And there's not that. I don't know, unless Kenny Pickett or one of these quarterbacks just blows everybody away at the combine and in the interviews and in the workouts, I don't know that there's a quarterback that a team is going to – I don't know that there's a quarterback teams are going to want to trade a King's Ransom to move up to three and go get. And if they do, they might want to move up to one to go get a guy that good. That's the
first
problem.
Team that would, as of right now, the number six overall pick with Carolina would be the first spot that is a quarterback needy team. Are we assuming that they want to move on from Sam Darnold?
They might be trading that number six overall pick to the Texans too.
Right.
Part of a Watson deal.
I mean, the teams that might be interested in Watson are all over the place up at the top of the draft.
Name them. It sounds like you're looking at it.
Detroit at number two overall.
Okay. I don't think Deshaun will go there, but yes.
Lefty's Cheesesteak is based in Detroit.
You keep bringing that up. You're right.
I'm tired of you. Sean, do you know you can still get real estate relatively cheap in Detroit because they had all those foreclosures from back when Detroit almost died.
That's another thing. If he wants to
buy a real
estate.
I don't know if that's true or not. But yeah, if he wants to buy like a foreclosure for $50,000, flip it, you know, get in there, get his hands dirty, put some elbow grease into a nice little a flipper.
That's right. Just picturing Deshaun with a vice and a sander out there, flipping his houses.
Making that house legendary.
Right.
Put a big L on the front.
That's right.
Legendary.
All right, so Detroit, who else you got there?
We've got the Carolina Panthers at number six.
Yep.
We have the Giants all over the place.
five and seven.
We got the Giants at 5-7.
Yep.
We have the Falcons at eight.
Okay.
The Falcons, they've got a little bit of an issue because Matt Ryan is going to be super, super expensive to get rid of. If you're going to rip off the Band-Aid and figure out a way to do it, might as well do it in a year where maybe you can get a quarterback. Now, a young quarterback like Deshaun Watson that can learn underneath Matt Ryan. Deshaun can fake another injury or something.
And he's from Atlanta, so that would make sense.
Denver at number nine.
That we know that one has been in the mix, absolutely.
At 10 is the New York Football Jets. They already have their walking injury.
Maybe.
Case.
I don't know. You just said that he's – who knows? Who knows what they think of him?
Washington Football Team at 11.
I think that's one that should be calling about Deshaun Watson. Absolutely.
At 12, you have the Minnesota Vikings.
Okay, I think they're probably okay. Well, Kirk Cousins is not great, but they're kind of stuck with him.
Kirk Cousins is astoundingly good in a few statistical categories this year.
He is. He is. Except for the one that is called wins. He's not great in that category.
Kirk Cousins is that girl that, like, checks off all the boxes. She's beautiful, and yet just not sexy at all.
Yep.
You know, like, she does everything. Like, she's smart. She's beautiful. She likes you, which is hard enough to find.
But she's just boring AF.
Yeah. Boring. Yes. Sexy with an incredibly boring personality. Except that I feel like he's, neither. Let's see, the Vikings, the Cleveland Browns.
I think the Browns should be making phone calls. I think they should be making phone calls.
They would, poor Baker. I want to see disgruntled Baker going. Now, the problem is at some point Baker's going to be the guy that is convinced he was discarded by the Browns for unfair reasons.
Right.
And that's when it's going to get ugly. Like, his next go-round is where maybe he starts blaming everybody.
He's
not going to be like a Manziel type. Don't get me wrong. But I think it could get ugly at the next stop.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app. We'll be right back.